You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
That really stinks. Odor events brought to you by Citrus Magic. Today, the Jones family will name all the odor events they can in 30 seconds. Ready? Go!
Rotten garbage can.
Yes, Molly.
Ew, musty basement.
Good, Jimmy.
Poopy diaper.
Yep, Haley.
Smelly socks.
Yes, Dave.
Stinky litter box.
Yes, Molly.
Ugh, funky fridge fumes.
Good.
Donald Trump wants Russia to drop more bombs on Syria. The GOP frontrunner told a crowd in Iowa that he sees no reason to stop the Russians.
Russia's now talking to Iraq. They're going to do some bombing and of ISIS. Which, frankly, I think is a great thing. Let Russia bomb ISIS. What are we talking about? They want to bomb them. Let them bomb them. Bomb the hell out of them.
Trump goes on to say that the U.S. and Russia will not start World War III over Syria. He did not comment on the speculation that the Russians are also bombing anti-Assad rebels and not just ISIS fighters. The probe of Hillary Clinton's email by the FBI apparently includes a second computer service company. Fox News says Connecticut-based Datto Incorporated is cooperating with federal investigations who asked them to preserve all records relating to Clinton. Datto was hired by the Colorado tech company that managed the Clinton server to help back up data in 2013. You're listening to USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
One of the world's leading experts on men's issues claims the dramatic growth of ISIS is based on a lie. USA's Russ Jones talked with Paul Lewis Cole, president of the Christian Men's Network, and has this report.
Cole, who heads up the international organization, believes there is a war on manhood, and without clearly defined rules and guidelines for manhood, society fills the void.
I think what's happened, if you will, in our culture is we have lowered standards in order to justify our own perversity proclivities.
Cole also contends ISIS is similar to gangs. They replace what young men need from a father, which is structure, identity, and belonging.
Identity is the story you tell yourself about yourself. And for most young men, it includes voices from all over the place who can't define masculinity, who won't define it because they're trying to lower standards. And so that's really a lot of what we face today in our culture.
Cole states it's difficult for men to know how to act like, think like, and be real men because of decades of male bashing.
And when men begin to accept responsibility, fatherlessness decreases. What increases then is the role of the family, loving, nurturing relationships, and I think healthier people.
The Christian Men's Network will host thousands of men for the Lion's Roar Global Men's Summit, November 4 through 6th at Calvary Church in Irving, Texas. I'm Russ Jones.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Anthony Lucero.
On today's program, I'll be talking about how new employees have 90 days to prove themselves, how to give your self-confidence a boost, the one word you should never start an email with, how small businesses face a huge liability when accepting credit cards, how to generate revenue during downtime, and my thoughts on the gun control debate. It's Thursday, October 8th, 2015, and I'll have all that and more right now on Taking Care of Business.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business. And working overtime.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gannot, and the program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. But before we get going, a brief check of the weather shows the temperature is currently 66 beautiful, gorgeous degrees outside at 12:06. And the forecast shows that today it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 69 degrees and a low of 52 under partly cloudy skies. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly cloudy with an afternoon rain shower possible and a high of 76, a low of 54. For Saturday, as I call it, leave it on a jet plane. For Charlotte, North Carolina, it'll be mostly sunny with a few clouds throughout the day and a high of 65, a low of 38. Sunday, mostly sunny, a high of 69 and a low of 44. A current check of the financial market shows the Dow is currently up 14.26 to 16,926.55. NASDAQ is down 34.67 to 4756.48. S&P 500 down 2.33 to 1993.62. Oil is up 87 cents to $48.68 per barrel. Gold down $4.60 to $1,144.10 an ounce. Today's wishing a happy birthday to a good friend of mine. Today, October 8th, is her birthday, so happy birthday to you. Know you're listening, and wish you the very best. Yes. The song Hooray from Hollywood, from the Hollywood Hotel. But why would Jim Gannot, the host of Taking Care of Business, be playing Hooray for Hollywood? Well, Hollywood came to Flemington the other day in the form of a gift, if you will, that we at Crown Trophy of Flemington had to create, turn into something, and that's going to be given out as a wedding present this weekend. So a woman comes into our store a couple of weeks ago and takes out of a bag a shoe, a very ornately decorated shoe. And she wanted to put that into some form of a case. And so, you know, we knew that we could get a case. We went through all the catalogs, found the acrylic case that we wanted to get. And then they started asking the story about the shoe. And it turns out that this shoe was used as a centerpiece in Madonna and Sean Penn's wedding. So the flowers had been stuck in the shoe, and the shoe was decorated very similarly to the same shoes that Madonna was wearing at her wedding to Sean Penn back, I believe, in 1986. So we get the shoe, we get the case, and the woman comes back, and now she brings with her a bunch of artificial flowers. And she goes, I'd like to recreate the centerpiece and then put that into the case. So we started, myself and Susan and Jen and Rochelle, we started working with it, you know, independently and then together, and finally came up with a beautiful arrangement, and the woman loved it. So Susan, who works with me, just happened to ask the woman, she goes, how did you happen to come across this shoe that belonged to Madonna and Sean Penn? And she goes, oh, that. Have you ever seen the movie Desperately Seeking Susan? And we said, yes. And she goes, well, I directed that. And our jaws just dropped to the floor. Here's the movie Hollywood director in our store asking us to work on this display for her. And so then she was talking about other movies that she had done. Her husband, Jonathan Brett, was with her. He's also a producer and a director. So we were a little bit starstruck and very happy to be working with these people. So now we're all on Netflix and we're trying to, you know, catch up on all of their films and everything like that. But it was real fun. And the best part was that when we were done, they were just blown away by the final product. So that's going to be presented this weekend at the wedding. And we're looking forward to the feedback as to whether or not the bride and groom like that. So that was a little bit of fun. Last week, as you know, I missed last week's show. I was up in New York at Crown Trophy's corporate headquarters for what we call the catalog committee meeting. And this was the first time that I've ever participated in the catalog committee. In the past, I've always just proofread their work. So to see what goes into making it happen was very interesting. And, you know, we talked about things like pricing and what product to put in, what product to take out, and the arrangement and the layout. So it was neat to put that all together. And I want to thank everybody who I had sent out some emails, and I want to thank everybody who gave us their comments on our catalog. And pretty much everything was very positive going in. But making the decision, what's in, what's out, how to address certain pricing issues was unique as well, because I hadn't been on that side of it. And then what was very unique was, here we're creating this 84 or 94 page catalog, but our corporate folks, our founder, Chuck Weisenfeld, Vice President Scott Kelly, they kind of let us alone. They were there to guide us through the process, but they didn't influence us in any way. If we wanted to raise prices, we raised prices. If we wanted to hold them the same, we hold them the same. If we wanted to put something on page 34 versus page 32, they let us do it. And they've always said that the committee makes the decisions and then they put the whole book together. So very interesting to see how that process works. Thank them for inviting me to be a part of it. And now I just can't wait for January when the catalog comes out and we can see the final product. So looking forward to that. A couple weeks ago, Pete Rose met with the commissioner of baseball to seek reinstatement. Now, as you may remember, Pete had received a lifetime ban for betting on baseball as a manager. Then there were some revelations that he might have bet on baseball when he was a player. I don't know what to believe anymore on this. I do know that that the Hall of Fame is missing a key member. And if you were to judge people on their character, then the Hall of Fame would be a very empty place. If you were to say that no alcoholics could be in the Hall of Fame, that would eliminate Babe Ruth. If you were to say that nobody from the steroid era could be in the Hall of Fame, that would eliminate some player. If you could say that people who cheated on their wives couldn't be in the Hall of Fame, it would be very empty, to say that people, if it was just high moral character, that they couldn't be there. Now, again, gambling on baseball, going back to the Black Sox scandal of 1919, obviously put a stain on the sport. And Pete did wrong, no doubt about it. But you can't ever forget his accomplishments on the field. Most hits ever, his hard-charging style, Charlie Hustle. And I think that the Hall of Fame has to have Pete in it more than likely. And I love the Baseball Hall of Fame, but I probably won't go back until Pete is in. So, hopefully, by the end of the year, Pete Rose would be reinstated into baseball and then appear on the ballot for the Hall of Fame. Yesterday was a unique day. I got a call from the Somerset Patriots, and they had a little problem. Now, it's a good problem to have. They just won their sixth Atlantic League championship, but the trophy, they need some engraving for an event that they're having tomorrow night. So they brought the trophy out to me, and what a mess. I don't think this thing has been polished in the 15-year history of the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball. So we spent a lot of time yesterday on the engraving and then on polishing and giving it some tender loving care, working on the base a little bit. But we polished it close to four times, got the black gook off, and now it's gleaming silver. So we're very happy with the final product, and we're honored to have worked on this trophy. And like I said, after four polishings, it's now looking like new. Now, tomorrow night, if you're interested, you can go to TD Bank Ballpark to the gift shop. The trophy will be on display there. It'll be your opportunity to get your picture taken with it. And there'll be several players from the Somerset Patriots there from their sixth championship team. So if you have some time tomorrow night, 5:30 to 7, bring the kids down to TD Bank Ballpark and get their picture taken with the Atlantic League championship trophy. When we come back, we're going to talk about Twitter and possibly removing the 140-character limit. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inchamberradio.com.
If you're looking to get in front of thousands of new customers, connect with your current customers, you don't want to miss out on the largest business show in Hunterdon County. The 27th annual Hunterdon County Business and Home Expo, coming up on a new date, Thursday, November 5th, in a new location at Hunterdon Central High School in Flemington at the Fieldhouse in Common from 2 to 7 p.m. You surely want to sign up. You surely want to exhibit. Something you don't want to miss. Contact the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at hunterdonchamber.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
This is Megan Jones Holt, the radio host of the Rotary Hour and president of Boxes for You. Why am I a member of the Chamber of Commerce? It can be summed up in one word: opportunities. Opportunities to market your business and yourself.
Hunterton Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good evening, this is Dr. Blood and my pal Igor. We want to invite you to visit us at the Haunted Village at the Red Mill in Clinton, New Jersey. Come by to have a cup of hot tea with me on October 9th, 10th, 16th, 17th, 23rd, and 24th. Tickets are on sale online at theredmillhauntedvillage.org. The prices are $30 for regular admission and $45 for express pass. Don't forget to scare up a coupon from our local merchants. We hope to have you soon.
Listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Jim Gano, with you for about the next 45 minutes. Glad you could join us. We got a lot to talk about today. This is one of those days when you got 10 pounds of stories and a 5-pound microphone, so hopefully we'll get most of that in. I did want to mention that last week I created a Facebook page for the show, and it's called Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. So if you go on Facebook and go to that page, like the page, then or become a follower of it, you'll get information that happens in between shows. So last week, for instance, I posted a story about how credit card companies now, with the new digital chip technologies, if retailers haven't gotten the new credit card processing machines, if it's a fraudulent charge, the retailer will be stuck with the bill. In the past, it's always been, you know, maybe like a $50 fee or something like that. Sometimes that fee could be waived, but now they're saying the technology is there. This should limit the amount of fraudulent charges. And as such, without that machine able to read those cards, the retailer would be responsible. So I have a story on that a little bit later in the program to give you a little bit more detail on that. But for now, again, if you can go to Facebook.com, look up Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. That's our Facebook page for this program. And like us, follow us, and then hopefully we'll be able to get you more information midweek. As it becomes available and as we think it's relevant to local businesses. Well, Twitter is saying that they may remove their 140-character limit, and soon you may be able to wax poetic on Twitter beyond the 140 characters. The social media service is working on a product that would allow users to share content longer than 140 characters, technology news service Recode reported last Tuesday. Twitter is also considering modifying how the 140-character limit is measured, for example, excluding links and user handles, Recode said, citing people familiar with the service. Twitter is making changes to increase usage and engagement, which has suffered a slowdown in growth that has depressed the stock price and hopes for the company's prospects. Increasing how many characters people can use in an individual tweet has been debated at Twitter for years, but the topic has gained currency under the interim CEO and co-founder, Jack Dorsey. Dorsey is one of the leading candidates to become Twitter's permanent CEO, SunTrust analyst Robert Peck says, and the pace of innovation has quickened at Twitter under Dorsey's stewardship. Twitter spokesman Jim Prosser declined to comment. The San Francisco company removed the 140-character limit for private messages known on Twitter as direct messages last month. Twitter moving beyond 140 characters is the very limited way that's being described makes perfect sense, says Jan Dawson, the chief analyst at Jackdaw Research. Essentially, Twitter would take some of the clutter, usernames, links, and images that currently takes up some of those precious characters and move it outside the scope of the 140 characters. The benefit of that? Twitter users would have more room and freedom to express themselves and new users would not be put off by users' handles, hashtags, and other Twitter paraphernalia, Dawson said. Getting away from the at sign and the hashtag syntax and making tags and names more legible should help new users feel more comfortable on Twitter, he said. I see this as an important part of Twitter's effort to improve the user experience for people new to the service, while also making it more usable for experienced users. Twitter, which is under the symbol TWTR, shares rose 1% on the news, but are still trading below the company's initial public offering price of $26. The stock is down nearly 30% this year as the company grapples with slowing user growth, executive departures, and growing turmoil over who will be picked to lead the company. Well, here's a story that I found very interesting and one that, in talking with business owners, kind of wraps it up, puts it in a nice little bow, and hopefully you'll see some value to this story as well. How long do you give employees to prove themselves when they're brought on, when they're hired within your company? Now, for some people, it can be very short. If you don't like it within 2 or 3 weeks, they're gone. Me, we have what we call a 90-day probationary period, and that goes both ways. We're telling the employee, you have 90 days to kind of prove yourself. We're also telling them, we have 90 days to prove ourselves to you. We keep the line of communication open. So if they're not happy with training, if they're not happy with how they're being brought along and groomed, we need to know about that. Also, if we're not happy with how fast they're able to pick it up, or if they're not able to meet the production demands, then we have to address that as well. But typically, we give it 90 days. That seems to be the industry average, as new employees have less than 90 days to prove themselves. Now, some time ago, as I mentioned, I was chatting with a fellow store owner about how a new hire was panning out, and they were frustrated that the person didn't seem to be getting up to speed swiftly enough. And this person counseled me to suspend my rush to judgment. He said, it often takes a year until you see what somebody is actually good at. Now, I'm always the person, or as always, this person was unusually wise, and now I realize that he was unusually patient. A survey of 319 executives at companies with revenue of $1 billion or more has found that 27% think that employers form an initial opinion as to whether an entry-level employee will be successful or not in less than 2 weeks. 78% think that employers make this determination in less than 3 months. The survey, which was conducted by the Harris Poll and will be released publicly next week, was fielded on behalf of Fullbridge, a company that teaches students and young professionals hard and soft business skills. Now, for Fullbridge, the takeaway from the survey results are clear. People must come into a job ready to make a mark from the get-go, even if they're brand new to the world of work. At more and more companies, from the moment you walk in the door, they're judging you every second, says Candace Olson, who's Fullbridge's co-founder and executive chair. It's not a very forgiving learning environment at many places for a novice. Now, as I've said before, while many corporations invested a great deal in training young workers 5 or 6 decades ago, far fewer do so today, a casualty of the shredding of the traditional social contract between employer and employee. According to a 2012 study of 500 companies of varying sizes across the U.S., a third of them spend no money at all to onboard new hires, and the average amount spent per worker on such efforts is a mere $67. Oftentimes, the lack of a robust assimilation process leaves the new employee confused and disoriented, says Bill Connedy, who served as Senior Vice President of Human Resources at General Electric for nearly 15 years. This gap is exactly what Fullbridge and a handful of others, including Koru and Tuck Business Bridge Program, Midcore, and General Assembly, have stepped in to fill. And yet, even if someone is fortunate enough to go through one of these boot camps, and remember, only a tiny fraction of the millions of recent college grads about to enter the workforce are, in fact, so lucky, is it really smart or fair to size up a new employee in a couple of weeks or even a few months? Mike Bender believes it is. The senior director of agency sales at Fixu, a mobile marketing company, says that he doesn't expect anyone to be awesome at their job in 2 weeks, but he feels that he can tell in that time with about 90% accuracy whether a new hire is professional, hardworking, and willing to learn. To some degree, evaluating people so quickly is inescapable. Everyone has a gut feel, says Keith Rolog, who's a management professor at Babson College and the author of What to Do When You're New. It's impossible for you not to have one. What's more, there's always the likelihood that your organization has made a truly terrible hire and that you have a toxic employee or a total crank on your hands, and in that case, you need to fire that person without delay. At the same time, making a hasty assessment can backfire. Numerous researchers have proven the power of a first impression bias, in which every new observation or piece of information you pull in automatically reinforces your initial take. With this in mind, Rolag worries that it's all too easy to confuse personality with performance. In certain work environments, for instance, employees who are more talkative may come across well at the outset, while those who are more introspective may be viewed as ineffective. The former may get lots of help and encouragement, while the latter aren't adequately supported, so that their ultimate failure becomes sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Even if a newbie is having trouble, it can be well worth taking the time to find an assignment that is a better match to their strengths. You need to have compassion for your worst performance, says Laszlo Bock, who's Google's Senior Vice President for People Operations, and he wrote that in his new book, Work Rules. If you're getting hiring right, most of those who struggle do so because you've put them in the wrong role, not because they are inept. The key for managers is to be conscious of their own biases and to gather additional feedback from supervisors, teammates, and administrative staff in the department on how someone is faring. Their collective wisdom is probably a far better predictor than the manager's own. In the end, for some jobs, it will make sense to follow Duda's guidance and give a person a full year to grow into an organization. Connolly suggests that while a fortnight is too fast, 3 months is probably not unreasonable to get at least a basic handle on a new hire. Within 90 days, he says, hopefully they've figured out the system, or they might be a wrong cultural fit. Of course, none of this matters for those being measured in less than 2 weeks. Like it or not, plenty of employers seem to be demanding that their employees show that they can gallop right out of the gate. When I think back to 1983, 84, when I was first getting out of college and joining the workforce, I worked for the Chubb Insurance Company, one of the first jobs out of college. It was a mass hiring. They were doing a decentralization. All of the insurance processing renewals were all being done in about 17 field offices. They were bringing all that back to the home office, and they hired about 715 of us to kind of manage that project. And I can remember spending 2 weeks in a conference room, first learning about the history of the company, the culture, how to dress, how to act, where to eat, things like that. There was an onboarding process that took place. Now, very often, what I see, even in my own business, is you hire somebody new, they come in, they fill out their paperwork, here, let me show you what you're doing today. You're working on this. And you just assign them a task and get them to work. And then at the end of the day, you check their progress. But you're not explaining the history of your company. You're not explaining how you got to this point. You're not explaining who the players are and what the role of the new person is. And I think that oftentimes adds to the confusion and makes it harder for someone to succeed, coming right out of the box. So hopefully you're not doing that. And or after hearing that story, maybe you'll take a look at your onboarding process and make some adjustments as necessary. As I came out of the break, I was talking to you about our new Facebook page and mentioned that I had posted a story there on credit cards. And here is that story. And I want to make sure that you're ready because it shows that about 4% of all retail businesses have actually acted upon this. Now, most small businesses are not ready, and some don't even know the basics about an impending costly credit card liability shift. The question is, are you ready? Now, added security comes with a cost, and small businesses might not be prepared to pay the price. As of October 1st, merchants are now required to accept chip credit cards that aim to improve security, or the business will be responsible for the fraud. Is your small business prepared to make the shift? The updated credit cards, known as EMVs, which stands for Europay, MasterCard, and Visa, have small chips that communicate unique data with every transaction. The new credit cards require a certain payment terminal that business owners will have to install if they don't want to foot the bill for any fraudulent charges. That means the only way to be protected from financial liability for credit card fraud losses is to accept EMV cards. Not only is this expensive, but small businesses just aren't prepared for the shift, the San Diego Union-Tribune recently reported. Smaller merchants have been slow to make the transition. According to new data from the Strawhecker Group consulting firm, currently only 4% of merchants with fewer than 20 employees have adopted EMV-compatible terminals, and a whopping 72% have absolutely no plans in place to deploy the technology by the liability shift date. NFIB member Ann Kenner, owner of Seabreeze Books and Charts, is one of the few small business owners actually aware of the new regulation. Unfortunately, for a lot of small businesses, they're going to be rudely surprised, she told the Union Tribune. And even though she's informed, Kenner says she's still unprepared and doesn't have the software to accept the chip cards. Although all businesses are strongly encouraged to become EMV compliant by the deadline of October 1st or by the end of 2015, approximately 70% of credit cards and 41% of debit cards in the U.S. will support EMV, according to the 8 Group. So hopefully If you're a retailer or in your business, if you're accepting credit cards, you are looking into this. Great idea to call your bank or credit card processor and make sure that you and your terminal can accept the EMV cards. You certainly don't want to be on the hook for thousands of dollars in fraudulent charges. We're going to take a break. When I come back, we're going to talk about the gun control debate and why it may not be able to be solved by the President and Congress. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. Volkswagen's top U.S. executive is apologizing to a House committee for the emissions cheating scandal that has rocked the German automaker.
We at Volkswagen take full responsibility for our actions, and we are working with all the relevant authorities in a cooperative way.
CEO Michael Horn told the Energy and Commerce Committee the discoveries of the emissions cheating devices are deeply troubling, and the company is working to find out exactly how it happened. Horn then offered a sincere apology for VW's use of a program that served to defeat the emissions regime. More deaths are being blamed on record flooding in South Carolina. The Department of Public Safety puts the weather-related death toll at 17 after a widespread storm dumped more than 2 feet of rain on parts of the state. Governor Nikki Haley warns that more evacuations are still possible as waters continue to rise in a number of eastern counties. For the USA Headline News, I'm Melody Burkett.
This report is brought to you by JCPenney. In honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, JCPenney partnered with Eva Longoria to host an empowerment luncheon with Hispanic influencers and 12 exceptional young Latinas from the Eva Longoria Foundation in the Los Angeles area. Guests at the event included actress, producer, director, philanthropist, and businesswoman Eva Longoria, Jane the Virgin star Jaime Camille, ESPN commentator, former professional soccer player, and Gonzo soccer founder Monica Gonzalez, and the Legends of Tomorrow, three Los Angeles Latinas making an impact in their communities.
We are celebrating some Latinas that have benefited from the programs that we provide at the Eva Longoria Foundation. They work so hard all year round, and today we partner with JCPenney to pamper them and applaud them for the work that they have done.
Panel members talked about how ambition, hard work, and philanthropy transformed their lives, all while maintaining and celebrating their identity. JCPenney recognizes the contributions of Hispanics and celebrates their heritage and culture. For more information on the event, visit jcpenney.com.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com. And before we continue, a quick check of the weather shows it's currently 66 gorgeous degrees in Flemington. Today it'll have mostly sunny skies with a high of 69 degrees and a low of 52. Tonight, partly cloudy skies will be the overwhelming characteristic for the evening sky. Tomorrow it'll be mostly cloudy with an afternoon rain shower and a high of 76, a low of 54. For Saturday, as I call it, time to get out of Bridgewater, leave on a jet plane, head for Charlotte, North Carolina for the Bank of America 500 and a visit with my son at UNC Charlotte. It'll be mostly sunny with a few clouds throughout the day and a high of 65, a low of 38. Sunday, mostly sunny, a high of 69 and a low of 44. I want to take a few minutes and talk about gun control and the recent mass shootings that have been going on throughout our country. And we could start with Columbine, Aurora, Colorado, Charleston, South Carolina, Sandy Hook Elementary, Tucson, Arizona, Fort Hood, and the list goes on and on and on. And last week we saw another mass shooting, at this time in Roseburg, Oregon, at the Umpqua Community College. Now, this is a startling statistic that came about. I saw this on Meet the Press on Sunday. 153,000 people have died from gunshots since 9/11. Since 9/11, just over 3,000 people have died from terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. We have devoted all these energies to prevent terrorism with Homeland Security, the TSA, etc., and it works. So should there be the same sense of urgency on mass shootings? Another interesting statistic is the requirement to get a driver's license versus getting a gun. And it's interesting because when doing this research, I looked it up, and the requirements for getting a car, essentially registering a car, and the requirements for getting a gun and getting a permit for a gun, all 50 states, you have to get a license or a permit to drive a car. But only 3 states require that to get a gun. In all 50 states, it will require some various forms of testing to drive a car. Only 6 states require any testing to get a gun permit. And of course, for the car, you register yearly, sometimes on a yearly basis, sometimes bi-yearly. Only 6 states require any registration. Now, is that unfair? Well, in the Constitution, there is no right to drive a car. Remember, they weren't even around back then. But there is a right to own a gun. It's called the Second Amendment. And because it is constitutionally protected, there isn't a damn thing that the president or Congress can do about it. Now, states can modify magazine sizes and the types of guns purchased, but they cannot take away your individual rights to own a gun. And that is for the people who want to legally own a gun. The bad guys will always find a way to get their weapon of choice, be it a gun or some semi-automatic rifle. They're going to get it. But there's a larger issue here, and some say that these mass shooters are mentally ill, and that's how I want to characterize this topic. I don't want to talk about school shootings or things like that. Mass shootings, which is defined as anything with 4 victims or more. Everybody says that these people are mentally ill, and in some cases that is true. But when you look at some of the writings that they leave behind, they more often than not aren't so much mentally ill as they are seeking fame and to be remembered for all time. They're referencing former mass shooters and saying, I want to be like this person or that person. They want to be remembered for what they've done. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold wanted to be remembered, and they got it. They will always go down in history being noted as the people who carried out the Columbine attack. But a year before, Eric Harris had wrote in a journal that he wanted to blow up the school, that he wanted to kill as many students as possible and teachers. And nobody did a thing about it. Timothy McVeigh wanted his fame, and he got it when he blew up the Alfred Murrah building in Oklahoma City. They are mentally unstable, to be sure, but they plotted their attacks, as most of these people do, for months, if not years. So we have to shift the focus in a couple of areas. First, I would recommend a mandatory background check. And if you want to buy a gun, and first of all, this would have to be done in all 50 states, not just in the 6 or 7 that are currently do it. But I think if you want to buy a gun and you want to use it for legal purposes, whether it's target shooting or protection or something like that, you will wait the 5 to 7 days or whatever it takes for a background check to come through. This background check can't just be, let's check his social security number, let's check if he has a prison record, let's check if there's anything outstanding. It also has to include a mental health analysis. What doctors are you seeing? What medications have you been prescribed? Are you mentally stable in a professional's mind to own a weapon? After that, I think we all, parents, educators, and employers, need to keep a watchful eye on our children, our students, and our coworkers, and we have to be willing to report suspicious or worrisome behaviors. Back in the early 80s, when postal workers, and I'm not picking on them in any way, but this is kind of where it became part of the national psyche, postal workers would go in and shoot up, their coworkers and their supervisors, and the term going postal was created. Had coworkers noticed the tendencies or in talking with these people that they were angry, they might have said something and possibly intervened to the point where it could have been prevented. If you have a family member who is mentally ill and you have guns in the house, there should be a safe place to turn in those guns, let's say with the police department, where they can be returned once the home situation is deemed safe. But the woman last week, who was the mother of the boy who shot up the Umpqua Community College, admitted that she had 13 guns, that the son had purchased some of them, that she had purchased some of them. She had bragged on Facebook that her Glock had 2 loaded magazines, that her AK and MK also had loaded magazines, and that she knew her son had access to these weapons. 13 weapons with a mentally ill person in the house. The father, who's divorced and living in California, could not believe that his son had access to those kind of weapons, knowing what he knew and what he said his wife knew about their son. I think in this instance, it would better to be wrong and say something than to be right and do nothing. If I were to accuse somebody or say, I don't think this person should have a gun, or I think this person could do some harm to people, and we called in the authorities, and they talked about it, and they deemed the situation either stable, unstable, safe, unsafe, whatever, I'd rather go through that embarrassment. I'd rather lose a friend over it than lose 25 innocent people as a result of this person getting their hands on a gun and doing the wrong thing. There is a mass shooting every 2 weeks in this country, and if the shooters are seeking fame, then the mainstream media needs to stop referencing them by name so that copycats will realize that the fame and notoriety just isn't there. After the Umpqua shooting, the University of Pennsylvania received threats, and another high school in California thwarted a potential attack by four students seeking that fame, just as a result of the news media coverage that the Umpqua shootings had developed. Now, that won't fix the whole problem, and I'm certainly not blaming mainstream media for making this situation worse. The medical profession needs to drop their patient-doctor privilege and be included on the background check. And if a person's name appears who they are treating for mental illness comes across their desk for a gun application, well, then they should step up and warn the authorities to refuse the person the chance to purchase a gun, or at least make them aware a problem exists. This person is being treated. Whatever the disease may be, depression, bipolar disorder, whatever the case may be, if it's going to result in the potential for harm, deny that application. We all have to be vigilant, and we all have to be aware of our surroundings, and if necessary, take the appropriate action, like the one Army soldier did at Umpqua, to thwart these attacks. But we have to stop talking about it and start doing something about it, and the place to start is in the mandatory background check area. And again, President Obama can go up to the podium and say, we need stricter gun control laws. And every senator in the country can get up and say, we need stricter gun control laws. The fact of the matter is, based on a document that was written over 200 years ago, guaranteeing people the right to bear arms in the Second Amendment, they can't do anything. It's all just hot air. So let's take action in other areas, in the mental health area, in the policing area, in the media, to make sure that none of these occurrences ever happen again. To be honest with you, I am sick and tired of having to come on this program and report that there was another mass shooting. It's time that we take back our country, we start enforcing the laws, requesting background checks. And yeah, the background check argument started because of the postal workers. If someone got angry, they went out, bought a gun, came back and shot up the office staff. They put a 3-day moratorium on getting a gun. I don't care if you make it a week. Do the background check. Let's get mental health involved. Let's get the medical profession involved. Get involved with the police departments. And then make sure that if we're going to issue a permit for a person to carry a gun or to use a gun or to even purchase a gun, it's a stable person that will know how to do it right. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You lucky dog, you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Jim Gano, with you for about another 15 minutes, and then we'll throw the rewind back on, hopefully around 3 o'clock. Our next host will be in, and maybe 5 o'clock with Holistic Around Hunterdon. The schedule just keeps changing around here. The next story is one during the preview that a lot of people have shown some interest in, and that is how to generate revenue during downtime. So I got 9 money-making tips for when business is slow. Now, if your small business experiences peaks and dips in productivity like mine does, where we have a spring busy season and a fall busy season, you're not alone. Seasonal businesses will naturally see a busy period followed by a slower one. We call it the peaks and valleys in our sales cycle. For example, a restaurant in a university town may experience a busy fall and winter, but a very slow summer, while the same restaurant in an area with a lot of tourism will see the opposite effect. Profits can be impacted by any number of factors, from a large road construction project that makes it difficult for customers to get to your door, to an influx of new business when a large conference is hosted in your town. During the downtime, it's easy to get worried or frustrated over the state of your business. However, by making smart use of quiet periods for your small business, you can generate revenue and ensure a solid bottom line for the year. So here are 9 tips for creating revenue during your small business's quieter periods. The first, offer some freebies. Nothing gets customers in the door like a giveaway, and now is the perfect time to offer free add-ons, such as a gift with purchase. If you're a retailer or an extra top-up on services you provide, have you ever noticed how many restaurants offer free or half-price appetizers during certain hours of the day? Number 2, go out and reach out to former customers. Now, while you're slow, is the perfect opportunity to connect with past customers and invite them back. What changed since their last visit? Do you have a new seasonal menu? Are you offering a new service that they might be interested in, or new products? Have you expanded? Reach out to your email marketing list with news about your business and invite your customers to come back. Include an exclusive offer or coupon. Never hurts. Number 3, host an event. Boost community spirit and keep your business top of mind by hosting an event, a fundraiser, or an open house. A casual drop-in event where old and new customers can stop by, have a drink and an appetizer, and say hello is the perfect opportunity for you to strengthen connections within your community. Number 4, you also want to think about expanding your business offerings. If you run a landscaping company, for instance, consider adding winter services to your menu, such as snow removal or holiday decorating. Brainstorm ways to eliminate the seasonal aspect of your business and create opportunities year-round. If your business is not seasonal but experiences regular peaks and dips, consider additional training for your team members to broaden their skill sets and create more demand for your business. Another good one is getting customer feedback by conducting a customer survey. Take advantage of a slow period to create and distribute a customer survey about your business. Analyze the responses you receive carefully and consider implementing some of the suggestions that you receive. By including a special coupon or code or access to an exclusive offer with your survey, you'll boost the odds of getting a repeat visit from past customers, as well as make people more likely to submit their feedback. Number 6, you also want a clean house. Now's the time to get your house in order. Do you have old versions of your business logo floating around? Create and adhere to an official company style guide. Renovate the interior of your business space, get new business cards printed, research and order a new piece of equipment that increases your production numbers, and take care of whatever outstanding housekeeping items you've been putting off. Number 7, maybe you can find yourself a niche market. Is there an opportunity for your business to focus on a niche market? For example, if you're a restaurant, can you start premiering and promoting vegan meals? People who are committed to a particular niche or lifestyle will be more likely to frequent your business year-round if they're able to get a quality product that fits your criteria. If you become known for your great vegan food rather than your excellent summertime patio, for example, you're more likely to generate a year-round regular clientele. Number 8, maximize your online presence. Give your online presence a thorough review, not just your website, but your email newsletter templates, your social media channels, and third-party online reviews about your business. During busy times, it's easy for these resources to slip under the radar. So make the most of slower periods to review and refresh your online properties. Make sure everything is consistent with your business's brand. Double-check that all links, images, and videos are working and that your site is optimized for mobile users. Review your content to ensure that it's fresh and up to date. And finally, network, network, network. You always want to be looking for opportunities to improve your business through networking. So attend an entrepreneur's forum, volunteer in your community, or go to an industry trade show to learn about trends that could apply to your business. Or simply set up a weekly lunch or coffee meetings with fellow entrepreneurs that you admire or would like to team up with. Make the most of your downtime by learning, networking, and getting inspired. And as I read this and realize that at Crown Trophy of Flemington, where over the past 2 months now, 2.5 months, we've been in a major upheaval, we're going to have to do just about all of these things. They came in, they had to tear down all the walls, dig a trench through the center of the store to replace a broken sewer line. Now they're putting that all back together. The floor's in, the steel studs are up, the sheetrock is up, they're taping and plastering. Next week we'll hopefully start painting. But when we come back, hopefully around November 1st, we've got to come out with a bang. We've got to let people know we're back because it's been 3 months. Some people think we're out of business. So yeah, we're going to offer freebies. We're going to reach out to all of our former customers. We're definitely going to host an open house for a week or two to get people to come back into the store. We've already expanded our business offerings with varsity jackets, signs, apparel, and promotional items. Now we have to just educate people that that's what we can do for them. We will conduct a customer survey. We do this once or twice a year anyway. Cleaning house is a great opportunity, like I said, to work on logos and make sure you have fresh product in your showroom. We're pretty niche as it is in our markets. We've always worked on our online presence, and of course we'll be networking to make sure that people know who we are, where we are, and what we do. So probably all 9 of those are going to be on my agenda for the next couple of weeks. So looking forward to getting the store back up and running and making sure, or the storefront, we've been running, you know, anyway, but let people know that now with a wide expanded showroom, probably 3 times as large as it used to be, brighter colors, better lighting, that, you know, I think people will realize they've just stepped into something entirely different than your traditional trophy store. Well, a hotel magnate says that this one word is one that you should never use to start an email, and it's got a lot of great merit to it. Now, if there's one thing that will put any email recipient off, it's immediately making them email about yourself by starting with the word I. At least that's what Jonathan M. Tisch, the co-chairman of the board of Lowe's Corporation and chairman of its subsidiary Lowe's Hotels and Resorts, tells the New York Times' Adam Bryant. Before email became the popular correspondence vehicle that it is today, formal letter writing instruction was something of a staple in schools, and it was considered by some bad etiquette to begin a correspondence with the word I. And what he means is that when you write a letter and you start with the word I, so let's just start the sentence and say, you know, I noticed the other day that, you know, your company is doing, you know, X, Y, and Z. Tisch learned this in his first month working at Lowe's Hotels in 1980. He said that his boss told him that whenever you're writing a letter, and now it applies to emails today, never start a paragraph with the word I, because that immediately sends a message that you are more important than the person that you're communicating with, Tisch explained. He said today he continues to apply this rule to all his email correspondence and encourages others to do so as well. When you start to train your thinking about how not to use I, you become a better writer, and it teaches you how to really think about an issue, he explains, what you are really trying to say and how you are going to say it without starting the paragraph with the word I. Tisch, also one of the owners of the New York Giants. And speaking of the New York Giants, as many of you know, I own a replica of the Super Bowl trophy from Super Bowl 21, and on the bottom is the name John Johnson. Very happy to find out that this week or this weekend during Sunday's game, Mr. Johnson will posthumously be inducted into the Giants Ring of Honor. So very happy that we are taking care of his Super Bowl trophy. Glad that he's getting the recognition that he deserves after a 60-year career with the New York Giants. And again, can't wait to be able to display that trophy, both either in my office or in our showroom. So looking forward to that. Getting up towards the top of the hour and the end of the show, so obviously looking, do we have any short stories or do we keep them for next week? And I think we're going to be keeping a lot of these for next week. Look, next week's show is half written. This is great. In sports, in NASCAR, Kevin Harvick did what he had to do to advance to the contender round of NASCAR's playoff system, the chase for the Sprint Cup, by winning last week at Dover International Speedway. Four drivers dropped out of the chase, including Jimmy Johnson, he's a six-time champion, Jamie McMurray, Paul Menard, and Clint Boyer. This week, the teams will load the haulers, and so will I, for the short trip to Charlotte Motor Speedway in Charlotte, North Carolina, in Concord, North Carolina, for Saturday night's Bank of America 500, an opportunity for me to head down to Charlotte and see my son, Colin, who is a freshman at UNC Charlotte. So we're going to fly in on Saturday morning, spend some time with him, go to the race Saturday night, probably hit the NASCAR Hall of Fame and some of the race shops. So looking forward to spending the weekend down there. In the NFL tonight, the Indianapolis Colts take on the Houston Texans to start week number 5 at 8:25 p.m. In NCAA football, the top 10 now looks like this after some major shakeups last weekend. The Ohio State University holds down the top spot, followed by TCU, Baylor, Michigan State, and Utah. Rounding out the top 10 are Clemson, LSU, Alabama, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. In Major League Baseball, the playoffs begin tonight.
What's that? Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Well, hopefully. That's what some of these teams are saying, too. Houston plays Kansas City, and Texas meets Toronto in the AL Division Series. While the Mets take on the Dodgers in the NL Division Series, the Cubs move into the NLDS and will face the Cardinals. Yes, the Cubs, the Chicago Cubs, are back in the playoffs and looking very strong under the direction of new manager Joe Maddon. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day when he said, "Never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best." If you have ideas for upcoming programming topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook using my personal page, Jim Gano, or our new Facebook page for this program, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Jim Gano, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I'll be taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I'll be taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime. Work out.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Huntington County Chamber of Commerce.
Call Huntington
our studios
Medical
are located in the CenturyLink
referral service
at 14
at
Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey.
For
the content
HMC,
and views of our hosts
visit us
do not
on the
necessarily
web
reflect
at
the views of the Huntington County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@huntington-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Huntington, buy local. Visit www.huntertonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
To the front runner and House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. USA Headline News.
In the beginning, man had to painstakingly brave the elements and scale the highest mountains just to deliver the good news.
Hear ye, hear ye!
Now they just go to christianpress.com. It's fast, affordable, and much easier on the joints. Quickly and painlessly deliver your message with Christian. Come to thousands. Meet new words. Meet form. Boost your business or organization message stands mountains above the rest. So reach your target market and get the results you need with christianpress.com or call 316-644-6185. That's 316-644-6185.
Friends, Romans, and countrymen, lend me your